Yun Lo had telephoned ahead from the mess, so that when the commission entered the auditorium of the research pavilion, the American patrol had been seated in a long line across the raised stage, behind a centered lectern. They watched the Sino-Soviet group enter with expressions of amused tolerance and boredom. Yun Lo moved directly to the platform, rummaging in his attaché case while the others found seats, by echelon, in upright wooden chairs. Large, repeated, seven-color lithographs of Stalin and Mao were interspersed on three walls, between muscularly typographed yellow-on-black posters that read, "Let us stop imitating," as a headline, and as text, "Piracy and imitations of designs hamper the development and expansion of export trade. It is regrettable that there are quite a few cases of piracy in the People's Republic. Piracy injures the Chinese people's international prestige, causes the boycott of Chinese goods, and makes Chinese designers lose interest in making creative efforts." The smell of new paint and shellac and the delicious clean odor of wood shavings floated everywhere in the air of the room, offering the deep, deep luxury of absolute simplicity. On stage, Ben Marco sat on the end of the line at stage right in the Mr. Bones position. Sergeant Shaw sat on the other end of the line, stage left. Between them, left to right, were Hyken, Gosfield, Little, Silvers, Mavoli, Melvin, Freeman, Lembeck. Mavoli was at stage center. All of the men were alert and serene. The audience was divided, physically and by prejudice. Gomel did not approve of Yun Lo or his work. Berezovo happened to see in Yun Lo's methods possibilities that would hasten revolutionary causes by 50 years. Five staff members sat behind each of these men, who sat on opposite sides of the room, recreating an impression of two Alphonse Capones, 1899 to 1947, attending the Chicago Opera of 1927. The two Chinese representatives sat off to the left, closer to the platform than the others, as bland as two jars of yogurt. Yun Lo winked at them now and again as he made his address with asides in various Chinese dialects to annoy Gomel. The stage was raised about 30 inches from the floor and was draped with bunting of the USSR and the People's Republic of China. Yun Lo stood behind the centered lectern. He was wearing an ankle-length dress of French blue that buttoned at the side of his throat and fell in straight, comfortable lines. The skin of his face was lap-streaked, or clinker-built, into overlapping horizontal folds like the sides of some small boats, and it was the color of raw sulfur. His eyes were hooded and dark, which made him seem even older than did the wrinkles. His entire expression was theatrically sardonic, as though he had been advised by prepaid cable that the late Dr. Fu Manchu had been his uncle. Yun Lo instructed the Russians with bright contempt, with the slightly nauseated fixity of a vegetarian who must remain in a closed room with carnivores. He used a pointer to indicate the various U.S. Army personnel behind him. He introduced each man courteously and by name. He explained their somewhat lackadaisical manners by saying that each American was under the impression that he had been forced by a storm to wait in a small hotel in New Jersey, where space restrictions made it necessary for him to watch and listen to a meeting of a ladies' garden club. Yun motioned to Raymond Shaw. "Pull your chair over here, Raymond, if you please," he said in English. Raymond sat beside Yun Lo, who placed his hand lightly on the young man's shoulder as he spoke to the group. Raymond's bearing was superciliously haughty. His pose, had it been executed in oils, might have been called the young duke among the fishmongers. His legs were crossed, and his head was cocked, with his chin outstretched. The male stenographer on Gomel's team and the female stenographer on Berezovo's squad flipped their notebooks open on their laps at the same instant, preparing to record Yun's remarks. The shorter Chinese emissary, a chap named Wan Chang, got his hand under his dress and scratched his crotch. "This, comrades, is the famous Raymond Shaw, the young man you have flown nearly 8,000 miles to see," Yun Lo said in Russian. "Your chief, Lavrenty Pavlovich Beria, saw this young man in his mind's eye only as a disembodied ideal as long as 2 years before he was appointed to head the Ministry of Internal Affairs and Security in 1938, and that was 13 eventful years ago. I feel I must add at this point my humble personal gratitude for his warm encouragement and fulfilling inspiration. It is to Lavrenty Pavlovich that this little demonstration will do homage today." Berezovo nodded his head graciously in silent acknowledgment of the tribute, And then the five staff people behind him just as graciously nodded their heads. Yun Lo told the group that Raymond Shaw was a unique combination of the exceptional, both internally and externally. With oratorical roundness, he presented Raymond's external values first. He told them about Raymond's stepfather, the governor, of Raymond's mother, a woman of wealth and celebrity, of Raymond's uncle, a distinguished member of the U.S. diplomatic service. Raymond himself was a journalist, and when this little war was over, might even rise to become a distinguished journalist. All of these attributes, he said, made Raymond welcome everywhere within the political hierarchy of the United States, within both parties. The line of American soldiers listened to the lecture politely, as though they had to make the best of listening to club women discuss fun with hydrangeas. Bobby Lembeck's attention had strayed. Ed Mavoli, who was still firmly convinced that he had just finished the most active 3-day pass of his Army career, had to stuff a fist into his mouth to conceal a yawn. Captain Marco looked from Shaw to Yun Lo to Gomel to Betazovo's recording assistant, a fine-looking piece with a passionate nose who was wearing no lipstick and no brassiere. Marco mentally fitted her with a B-cup, enjoyed the diversion, then turned back to try to pay attention to Yun Lo, who was saying that as formidable as were Raymond's external attributes, he possessed internal weaknesses that Yun would show as being incredible strengths for an assassin. "I am sure that all of you have heard that old wives' tale," Yun stated, "which is concerned with the belief that no hypnotized subject may be forced to do that which is repellent to his moral nature, whatever that is, or to his own best interests. That is nonsense, of course. You note-takers might set down a reminder to consult Brennman's paper, Experiments in the Hypnotic Production of Antisocial and Self-Injurious Behavior, or Wells' 1941 paper, which was titled, I believe, Experiments in the Hypnotic Production on Crime, or Andrew Salter's remarkable book, Conditioned Reflex Therapy, to name only three. Or if it offends you to think that only the West is studying how to manufacture more crime and better criminals against modern shortages, I suggest Krasnogorsky's primary violence motivation, or Serov's The Unilateral Suggestion to Self-Destruction. For any of you who are interested in massive negative conditioning, there is Frederick Wertham's The Seduction of the Innocent, which demonstrates how thousands have been brought to antisocial actions through children's cartoon books. However, enough of that. You won't read them anyway. The point I am making is that those who speak of the need for hypnotic suggestion to fit a subject's moral code should revise their concepts. The conception of people acting against their own best interests should not startle us. We see it occasionally in sleepwalking and in politics every day." Raymond sighed. The youngest man on Gomel's staff, seated farthest back in the rows of irregularly placed chairs, picked his nose surreptitiously through the ensuing silence. Betazovo's recording assistant, her breasts pointing straight out through the cotton blouse without benefit of B-cup, stared at Marco just below the belt buckle. The Chinese had become aware of how much Comrade Gomel smelled like a goat. Bobby Lembeck was thinking about Marie-Louise. Most of the Russians understood clearly that what Yun Lo had done was to concentrate the purpose of all propaganda upon the mind of one man. They knew that reflexes could be conditioned to the finest point so that if the right person leveled his finger from the right place at the right time and cried, "Deviationist," or "Trotskyite," that any man's character could be assassinated or a man could be liquidated. Conditioning was intensified repetition.